Engage fluo injectors.
Engaging fluo injectors.
Fluo reactors at 80%, sir.
Fluo containment field is destabilizing.
Emergency fluo containment protocols now. All hands brace for impact.
Brace for impact in 3, 2, 1.
Holy balls, we're back with another episode of World 101 Podcast. Before we dive in, quick tease for the third half of the show. This week, we're taking a look at where you play your games, what console, and where in the house. So stay tuned for that. That's the third half of the show. That's after the break that comes after the first half of the show. After that, this is your gentle reminder that you can and should subscribe and share to this podcast on your podcatcher of choice. And if you like what you hear, share it with your friends. And if you don't like what you hear, share it with somebody that annoys you so they can be annoyed too. I don't care why you do it, just do it. Spread the love or the aggravation. Your call. Either works. Also in the show notes, you'll find a link to our awesome Discord where you can join in and jump into the conversation with us. We would love to see you there. And hopefully we will after this episode. Awesome quick shout out to our sponsor, Imaginary Authors, helping you up your scent game. More about them just before the break. All that out of the way.
Choose your fighter.
I am, as always, your host, Raul to the Wall. Joining me this week is one of my lovely partners, Bonnie. There you go. Don't do the Michael. Michael does the thing where he'll like nod, and then I go, "It's audio," and he goes,
"Got waved."
This joke has been going for years. I love that without any prior knowledge or prompt, you're gonna make Michael so happy about that. Oh dear God! All right, so let's dive in with.
Oh my God!
Video games.
Bonnie Love, what have you been playing?
Hades. So I'm bad at video games. This is a well-known fact that I'm totally okay with. I play games very slowly. usually, I don't know how to put it. I'm bad at video games. I'm okay with it. So I always take that perspective with it when I play them, especially when people have to suffer and watch me play them.
I don't think play them slowly. I think you just play them in small chunks.
Well, there's that too, because by the time I'm done working, I have like an hour at the end of my night, and I'm like, all right, this is my gaming hour, and I'm going to play my game in this little short burst. But I'm also just not in a hurry anymore. I used to pressure myself to try and finish them and be a completionist and do all this other, you know, 100%ing thing, and I stopped playing them because of it for a long time. And now I'm like, all right, I'm just going to play. So it took me about 3 or 4 days to realize that you have two separate kinds of upgrades where you can upgrade your weapon and then you get boons. I literally just found that out last night. But it's fun. I like that, especially as someone who used to have a perfectionist issue, I can die as many times as I want to and it doesn't detract from the fun of the game. Because a lot of times you play them and I would get stressed out about dying or running out of lives, and that one, it doesn't matter. You just play, and if you die, usually you go back, and then the little characters have fun stuff to say, and there's more little rooms open, and it's just,
yeah, Hades did a great job taking the Rogue formula and building on it in terms of narrative, which is something that Rogues don't usually do super well. Hades was kind of the first to really seem to crack that formula. Dead Cells did a little bit, but Hades is the one that really cracked it wide open. If you're loving Hades and you want a little more, I will shout out another awesome but tragically now defunct, but apparently possibly coming back from the dead podcast. And I know I've talked about him before on the show, and I know I've mentioned him to you before too. Called Gameplay, and they actually had a two-parter episode on Hades that was really fucking good. So well worth checking out if you get the opportunity. But anything else you've been spinning in your disc tray or, you know, blowing into your cartridge slot?
Well, you know, I played through Islets. That was the first one I played through that you gave me.
Uh-huh. Islets is so good.
It's just so cute.
It is. It's goddamn adorable.
It's adorable. I turned it on like, oh, I'm a mouse. It's freaking cute. Okay. And so I don't know. That was my first really good, like, playthrough of a game since I got the Switch. Because, you know, I've been playing Pokemon Violet. And that one's open world, so you kind of just start and stop whenever. And it doesn't matter. But this one, I, like, obsessively was like, I need to finish this. I need to go home right now and do more things and find out what happens next and save more tiny, adorable creatures.
Oh, I know. You played some haiku, though, didn't you?
I got through... That's Haiku the Robot, right?
Yeah.
I got a little ways into it. I need to put that one back in. I was doing that thing where I was putting in one of the games you loaned me and I'd play it for like 5 or 10 minutes and then I'd play another one and just like until one stuck. And so Hades is the next one that stuck. And that's why that one's the one I'm like, I can't. It's about to be the next Islets for me where I just can't stop. I gotta know what happens next.
I will tell you, this is one of those weird things where like certain games have certain time of the year feels for me. Haiku has that like summer night feel.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Like the windows are open and you can feel the air moving through the house and all the lights in the house are off and everybody's asleep and it's got just kind of that low ambient background. Like the music is good, but it's not super in your face. It's kind of chill. You can hear the squeaky robot shit, and it's so perfectly summer night for me. The original Abe's Odyssey on PS1 was the same way, actually. I actually wrote a piece for... I wrote an article that got stuck in somebody's indie magazine about that one time, called The Perfect All-Nighter.
That's cool.
I was house-sitting for somebody once for like a week, and I brought my PlayStation over, and it was middle of summer, and I was... summer break in high school and sat up all night for a couple of nights playing Abe's Odyssey, and it had all the right feels and color schemes, and it was just so good. That's one of the sucky parts about getting old. I can't do the sit up all night and play games thing anymore. I just can't.
Well, that's another reason I like Hades. Like I was telling you before, I can limit how long I play it more easily. Like, even if you get on a really good run, you can be like, all right, I'm going to do 3 runs tonight, and then I'll do my 3 runs, which will take me about an hour or more, depending on how slow I am and how much I actually die. And like, no, that one didn't count. We're going to try again.
Those runs will take you longer the better you get.
I'm noticing that, too. Like, the further... And that's another thing I like. It doesn't... The learning curve was there at first, but it's got so much hack and slash in it, and I love hack and slash. I'm like, oh yeah, I can, I can just do this. Yeah. This is fine. Mm-hmm. But the way they laid it up helps it have more challenge to it as well. Like, it doesn't get like some hack and slashes where they kind of stay easy, it seems.
Yeah, it all kind of scales.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like you said, if you like Hades, I think you would thoroughly enjoyed Dead Cells as well. Dead Cells isn't quite as heavy on the narrative, and it's a side scroll instead of a top-down isometric. But other than that, you're going to get a lot of the same feel and scratch the lizard brain itch and the whole one more run feel out of Dead Cells like you do Hades, I think.
I like side scrolls too. I'm looking for a
So I can... Dead Cells is great. But
probably still forget.
I
can get that on the Switch, right? You're not just telling me about something I can't get, right?
Yeah, and it is very frequently on sale, including bundles that have like all the paid DLC. So you can usually find the bundle, the game by itself, or the bundles on sale for maybe like $15.
It's not bad.
I'm
actually gonna...
No, and you will get gobs and gobs. I'm pretty sure I've clocked several hundred hours on Dead Cells over the years. Most of that in the first year or two, but I still go back and piddle with it every now and then. I need to go back to it, especially now that all the DLC is out and I have some paid DLC stuff that I've barely touched, like the Castlevania DLC.
It's actually on sale right now, so it's like 50% off.
And it's awesome and it's well fucking worth it.
It's on sale until 4/21 at 2/59, so it's just in time for 4/20. You know how I feel about 4/20.
Yeah, no, it's a great fucking game. I played it before. I played it when it was still technically in early access, so I got to see the game evolve from one update to the next over the years. And God bless the devs. They kept support and like active updates and development coming for almost 7 years.
Damn, that's cool.
Yeah. That's a lot of- and most of those updates were free. I think there's only three, maybe four paid DLCs, and even then, those DLCs were no more than $5 a piece.
Oh, that looks super cute. I would definitely.
So there is gobs of game to be had in Dead Cells. But
just saved.
Let's see. What have I been playing this week? I dipped back into Vampire Survivors because the adventure mode DLC stuff opened up for me and I downloaded the Among Us DLC, which is ridiculous and adorable and hilarious.
Okay.
Oh, it's fucking fabulous. Because I know you've played some of it. So imagine playing, you know, Vampire Survivors, but you've got the little Among Us crewmates and all the they've got all the weapons and accoutrements are all Among Us themed. So like one of them's the imposter tongue that like lashes out and shit. One of them's the swipey card that just, you know, whacks everything on the screen. And oh, it's great.
It's adorable.
It's fucking hilarious. But I picked it back up again because I saw they announced the new like Contra crossover DLC. And I'm kind of stupidly excited for that as well. But I hadn't gotten to play any of the adventure mode stuff and I wanted to check it out. And I'm like, oh, cool. Two birds with one stone. Let's do this.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. On Wes's recommendation, I picked up and I finally started playing Balatro and I may have a problem.
That good?
It scratches the same itch that Slay the Spire does, and I lost about 6 months of my life to Slay the Spire. Which means I'm just going to be fucked for another 6 months when Slay the Spire 2 comes out. I already know it's coming. I'm just like, yeah, we may as well just block out half the calendar year that year.
So when I don't hear from you for a few days, I'll know where to look. Just look something at Nintendo. Like, see if you're online. Like, oh yeah, okay, that's what he's playing. Oh yeah, okay, all right, never mind. He's still pretty alive. Much. It's good.
Pretty fucking much. But no, Balatro is beyond fucking clever. This dude took poker as the base for the game and then built his entire game around it. So you get every hand, you get 8 cards dealt out. And you have to try and make the best poker hand you can out of those 8 cards. So you can select up to 5 of those 8 to try and make the best fucking poker hand possible to score points and activate multipliers. And your goal is, like, each round, you're trying to clear a particular score with only, like, 3 or 4 hands to play to get your score over that threshold line. And as you keep playing through the blinds, so you've got like anti rounds that have a small blind, a big blind, and a boss blind essentially. Okay. And they each have like increasing threshold score thresholds that you have to get over. And then the boss blind also throws in like an extra fucking wrench in there to work against you. But as you get through each of those blinds, you get a crack at the shop where you can pick up extra stuff to shuffle into your deck. So you can pick up extra like regular playing cards, you can pick up extra jokers, and there's a whole bunch of different jokers that have different modifier effects. You get tarot cards that will like permanently modify stuff. You get the celestial cards that will permanently upgrade the number of coins and the number of like multipliers that you get for different things like two of a kind or you know, a pair, two pair, a flush, all that. So those all track differently. It's super fucking clever. Added bonus too, for because I know you play handheld more than anything, just because the way it's laid out and it works very, very well for this, it is touchscreen enabled, so you can sit there and just, you know, tap it like a tablet.
Ooh.
For all your selections.
I don't know how to play poker though.
Everything you need is in the tutorial. It's super fucking easy.
That's good, because I don't know how to play poker. I've never played poker. It's not one.
Really,
I've
ever only thing you need to know is the, you know, what hands are better than other hands, and so and it gives you all that. Like, it lets you refer back to that frequently, so you can see how leveled up each of those things is too.
Well, that's cool. And I'm assuming it follows
super easy to get into.
I'm assuming it follows traditional poker rules.
Yes,
like as
but
far
no.
as far as the card hands go. Sorry, I should have elaborated.
Like, you can play a hand and only play three cards though, instead of playing five. And you start to learn how to balance that out based on what you want to hold in your full hand of eight and what you want to discard, because you only have a limited number of discards to chuck out junk cards that you don't want to try and build the better hands that you do want.
Makes sense.
It is super, super clever. And this is a great example of tying back to the speedrunning episode that we put up a couple of weeks ago about the idea of taking an existing game and basically building around it to make something new out of it. This is a perfect shining example of that. It does it so fucking well. On that, what else have I been playing? I've been sitting with Zoe. They're getting back into Hellblade because Hellblade 2 is coming out and they want to finish it before the second one comes out, so we can play the second one together. I know there's something else I've been piddling with on the Xbox, and I don't remember what now. It's going to annoy me. It'll come to me. I swear to God, I'm going to shut this recording off and it's going to fucking hit me in the head. Like, part of me is almost about to hit pause and go up and fucking check the... I'm like, what did I play? I played something.
So it's bad. It's like, I remember
talking. I know what it was fucking... I've been playing a little bit more of Botany Manor. And
yeah, because you were telling me about it the other day.
Botany Manor is super chill. It's got an art style very, very similar, very reminiscent to The Witness. Adore The Witness, and I love the art style. The gameplay does not have that same hook that The Witness does. It's a puzzle game as well, but it's not as logically demanding. There's definitely a couple of things where I'm looking at it going, I wish it had this. Like, just little minor things that I wish it had tweaked. But what is there is really enjoyable, and it's on Game Pass, so I didn't have to shell out for it. I got to, you know, check it out and try it and go, okay, this is not, I could pick this up now and again kind of thing. But it doesn't have the same gravitational pull for me that The Witness did. But I do like it, and I appreciate the art style. I know there was something else. I don't... God, what is it? It's there. It's in... I'm like, what did I fucking play? God, I need to start writing it down every week. I swear to God. I used to be able to do this whole shit without notes, and now I've got fucking notes for show. Like, God, my brain is old and addled and full of holes now. Jesus. Yeah. You've got left brain and right brain and smooth brain, and I've got like Swiss cheese brain.
It happens to all of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, pretty fucking much. But that, I'm pretty sure that's most of what I've been playing. That's all the big meaty stuff. I feel terrible. There was something I was fucking playing and I put down because I started playing Balatro. What the fuck was it? Oh, I know exactly what it was. Jesus. If I tabbed over on my home screen, one more tab. Holy shit. And I knew. That's why I couldn't fucking see it and figure it out. It's because it was so fucking close to Balatro. Because I started playing Slay the Spire again.
Yeah, so you told me about that one too.
Yeah, I started playing Slay the Spire again because Wes was talking about Balatro. And I'm like, I want to play Slay the Spire again. And then I started playing Slay the Spire. And then I started thinking about it. And Wes was like in my head. And so I went and picked up Balatro and started playing it. And now Balatro is fucking taking over. Oh, God damn it. If you haven't seen it, I will send it to you, and I will even throw a link in the show notes too, because if anybody listening to this has not seen it, you should. Game Maker's Toolkit, Mark Brown, did an awesome, I think it was maybe like 10 minutes max, did a great piece on Balatro and like the inherent design fallacy with it that you just can't program out. So, because the thing of it is a big part of the hook of Balatro is that moment of playing your hand and watching your score go up and hoping that you've got enough to clear the threshold. But the thing of it is, if you know your math and you keep track of everything that's going on, you can math it all out beforehand, but it won't tell you the final score until you play the hand. So it's a question of, are you playing because you like the lizard brain, watch the numbers go up excitement thing that kind of simulates gambling? Or are you, getting out the pen and paper or the calculator app on your fucking phone and figuring out if this hand is going to get you enough fucking points to win? So you can play it super hardcore, or you can just casually sit back and play and chill. So it's, it's fucking awesome. It makes it work for both kinds of players, and that's a really cool fucking trick to pull off. Like, I know it's technically a design logic fallacy, but somehow the bug is the feature. Also, I have this whole retro liminal space 80s, 90s, midnight vibe thing that I love about it, because it has a whole CRT filter where it kind of simulates the curvature of an old CRT tube screen and like the scan lines going across. And I'm like, oh, that makes me so happy inside. It's so dumb and so fucking useless. It does nothing to the function of the game, but it makes my stupid old brain happy staring at it, and somehow it makes it more comfortable to stare at for longer periods of time, apparently. I don't know that for a fact, but I'm sure if somebody commissioned a study on it, it would be a thing.
It makes you happy, and that's what matters.
I'm not going to disagree on that, actually. So, but that's I piddled with a little bit of Downwell because I was showing showing it to Zoe's brother and showing off the flip grip because we were talking about it. That's so a little bit of Downwell in the mix, but not a ton. Mostly straight back to fucking Balatro.
I mean, I understand. I mean, you already know what I'm playing, what I'm gonna play when I get off here.
Uh-huh. Oh, I know, and you should go play more of it. It's fabulous.
But I'm about to do.
But yeah, I will see if I can dig up links for the gameplay episodes they did on Hades as well. And I'll send them to you, and I'll stick them in the show notes as well. Because, God bless, gameplay was such a good show. That is a podcast that I am regularly sad is no more. So, all right. So let's wrap up the first half of the show with a word about our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors, helping you up your scent game with fragrances for guys, gals, and non-binary pals, both in not only in colognes and perfumes, but also in perfumed oils, candles, and bar soaps. the City on Fire. I've talked about it a ton. Absolutely my favorite. A 100% fucking panty dropper. Coming in right behind Memoirs of a Trespasser has grown on me to love. Memoirs of a Trespasser is like a mellowed out City on Fire. And it's so good. Like, it doesn't quite have the sulfur to it from the burnt match that City on Fire does, but it has like everything else and then a little bit more warmth to it. Oh, so, so good. The bar soaps are phenomenal. It is one of the best cleans I've gotten. I got one bar to try it because I'm iffy, because I've done body wash for so goddamn long, and it's been ages since a bar soap competed with body wash for me. But I'm like, you know what? Let's try. I was fucking impressed. I need to order. Like, I'm almost through the one, and I'm going back and ordering in a 3-pack this time. So check them out. Awesome stuff all the way around. And if you're not sure what you're going to like, check out the samples. They have awesome little sample sizes for a couple bucks a pop. You can try a whole bunch of stuff and find what's right for you and share the rest with your friends. So go check them out. Link in the show notes down below. And let's take it straight to the break. And we're back with the third half of the show. This week, we are taking a dive down the warp pipe.
Oh, wow. Love these pipes.
And we're looking at and asking the question, how do you choose where to play your games and why? And I don't mean, actually, this might matter, but I was going to say, I don't mean, you know, do you choose to play it laying in bed or in a chair or on the toilet or in the car? But that could be relevant here, actually. And we can dig deeper in that. That's almost worth talking about. But more specifically, when a game is available on multiple platforms, how do you decide which platform you want to play it on? So let's dive in, because this we've kind of talked about in chat a little bit about the idea of waiting for a game to come out on Switch. And I think this is a more broad look at that conversational topic. So I'm going to toss it to US, and off the top of your head, new games coming out. It's available on everything. How do you decide what goes into your thought process on deciding where you want to buy it and play it?
So if this is a brand new game, for me personally, I have to take into consideration my gaming PC is not that powerful, so I'm probably not going to play any brand new AAA games on it.
I'm with you there.
So that immediately limits myself to the three major consoles. And honestly, for most non-exclusives, and I'll talk a little bit more about other than just this reason, but the Switch is out because of power alone. Most of the time, if it's a AAA release. Mm-hmm. Between Xbox and PlayStation, so the PS5 for me right now is the shiny new toy. It's the one I got most recently. So, you know, naturally there's going to be a little bit of a bias towards that. Mm-hmm. However, Xbox, you know, because it has Game Pass, a lot of the time, if it's a day one Game Pass release, if nothing else, I'll play it on Xbox just to try it out. And if I decide I like it, sometimes I'll take some of the further considerations I'm going to talk about later into mind. But I'd still say, even though I'd say that if it's a day one Game Pass release, almost always start on Xbox at the very least. And then after that, it's honestly a crapshoot, depending on how much power's processing is needed for it. So,
okay.
Slight bias towards that. Criteria number two, what kind of controller works better for this? So most first-person games, again, if they don't require a lot of power, I'm probably going to be on PC for, just because keyboard mouse works better for that. I know you can now, plug in
Xbox
a controller.
Xbox did just roll out the keyboard and mouse compatibility on Xbox.
That is true, but I also like, when I'm playing console, leaning back, if that makes sense. I don't want to have to put something in front of me to support a keyboard and mouse. I think that also kind of a slight difference is, like, where are you sitting when you play it? You were kind of talking about that a little bit earlier, but do I want to be on
suddenly
the
that
couch?
Matters now.
Do I want to be on the couch, or do I want to be in my gaming chair? And I don't even have a proper gaming chair. If you're watching this on video, you can see it's kind of like just a weak little office chair with a little bit of netting on it. So I don't have that big old cushiony one. I'm sure that would be more comfy for
classic.
Yeah. No, I don't. I don't have.
Shout out to Better Off Ted. There's a deep cut for you.
But yeah, if it's something I feel like I'd be better on the couch for, it's usually Xbox or PlayStation. If it is something where I value portability, this might shock you. I most often will get it on Steam rather than the Switch, just because I'd rather play it on my laptop most of the time.
Okay.
I don't have a Steam Deck yet. That's my next big gaming purchase.
I was honestly wondering if that's where you were going with that.
If I had a Steam Deck, I would pick that over my laptop. But I won't say this. The Switch has great games. This is not me dissing the Switch. But almost all criteria for what makes me pick a console to put a game on, it's last in almost every category. It's the weakest hardware, so I'm not going to be choosing it if I'm sitting down at home. It has far and away the worst controllers. I'm 6'1". I've got big hands. I could, like, grip a Joy-Con and you wouldn't be able to tell what I'm holding in my hand if I had it in a fist like this. And if I'm the times where I personally am gaming on the go, unless I'm in a long, long car ride, almost any other time, my laptop works just as well. So
I've kind of been kicking this thought around all day in prep for this, and I've realized there are a series of qualifying sorting questions that come into play for me for this, and I don't know that there is inherently a particular order in which I go down this list. I just kind of look at all of them and smash it together to get a final answer. The things that matter are going to be, one, and I'm going to speak to one of yours real quick, just because it's not on my list, is the controller. The controller doesn't bug me. Between my Switch and my Xbox, those controllers are pretty much the fucking same to me. If I'm playing handheld, the whole Joy-Con thing doesn't fucking bother me. I've got a grip on my Switch. I've had it there for years. It's wonderful. It fits beautifully. It's super comfortable. There is one scenario where the controller will actually be the determining factor. And it's if I'm playing a game or looking at a game that offers Tate mode. Because if I'm looking at a game that offers Tate mode, like Downwell or Ikaruga or anything of the ilk, Binary Star Infinity, shout out to that deep cut, which if you like shmups, you should play it. It's really enjoyable, excellent, short, digestible, a lot of fucking fun. But if a game has Tate mode, automatically goes on my Switch because I have a flip grip. And here's a weird one for you, because like you, I'm not quite as, you know, tall and lengthy, but big old bear paws. However, the flip grip is shockingly one of the single most comfortable ways to play the Switch, humanly imaginable. And it doesn't seem like it would be, but the weight distribution makes everything incredible. Like, bringing the Joy-Cons in a little bit closer and the weight being in a vertical alignment instead of horizontal works amazingly well. Like, you don't expect it. And even holding it, your brain will go, this shouldn't feel this comfortable, but it does. But at this point, I think that's the only time when controller will ever figure into this equation for me. Past that, what type of game am I playing? What am I looking at? Am I looking at bleeding edge, triple A, you know, visual feast for the eyes? If that's the case, Switch is probably not my go-to. Probably there may be some extenuating circumstances, and we'll get to that. So, you know, retro as opposed to bleeding edge, probably gonna lean towards the Switch. Another question that will come in and could modify that is it on Game Pass? Because if it's on Game Pass, I will probably start it on Game Pass before I make a purchase decision. And if I start it on Game Pass and I like it, I will probably stop it pretty quickly and then buy it on Switch, because I like a lot of my retro style indie games on my Switch. It's just kind of my happy place.
May I make one small addition to that? If I play a game on Game Pass I really, really like, and I like it enough that I plan on buying it, mm-hmm. I also take into account what platforms is it physical on.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy.
I'm actually specifically, I know Hi-Fi Rush is on the PS5 now, and that's probably where I'm going to get it physical, for the sole reason that I've already beaten it on the Xbox. And so when I do buy it physical, I'll just see what it's like on PlayStation. Let's just say, for the sake of this argument, that Hi-Fi Rush was physical only for Xbox. Let's say that Phil Spencer didn't decide to let this one roam free, right? 100%, I'd still buy it physical on Xbox. Absolutely would. And let's say that let's say it's on both PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, like all three of them available, but it's only physical on one of them. That's the one I'm gonna buy it on, probably.
Yep. Other things to consider: what genre am I playing? Because if it's something like it, and I'll grant you it's not common for me, but on the rare occasion where one comes up that I want to play, if we're talking an RPG, especially leaning towards the more traditional turn-based, flick through the menus, grindy RPG, I'd rather play that on my Switch, because when I'm going through the grindy sections that are just kind of manual labor, I can pull it out of the dock, lay in bed, and do that shit pretty absentmindedly while watching something on TV. And then I can throw it back in the dock for like big grandiose scenes and enjoy that on my big screen. That's a big qualifying thing. Is this a sit down for hours on end play session game, or is this a bite size session game? Makes a difference to me. The more bite size, the more I'm probably heading towards my Switch, because I can pick it up, put it down. It's great for when I'm out and about. Like if I'm sitting in the car waiting to pick up Olivia from school and I've got an extra 20 minutes, I can flip on my Switch and play it in the car while I'm waiting. That's the right fit for that. That's one of those things where you look at it and go, yeah, no, this feels like it belongs on the Switch, which was a thing for, you know, a comment made on games for a lot of games for a lot of years at this point. That's faded considerably in the last few years as the Switch has aged, but it's still there and it still comes up. And there are some games that I look at and go, yeah, no, this feels like it should be on the Switch.
So one thing that's kind of adding on to that, and taking that and a point I made earlier that you said controller doesn't matter to you. I think it partially does to the genre. Like, for example, the fact that the D-pad is on top for PlayStation, but it's on bottom for Xbox and Switch, I think makes a difference. So for me, if I'm playing a 2D game, not the full 360 type of 2D like Vampire Survivors, but something like, Mario is the first 2D platformer to come to mind. I know that's not on PlayStation, but humor me for this because I'm...
I'll throw you a better
example. Meat Boy. Or
Dead Cells.
Like Dead Cells. All right, something like Dead Cells. A 2D platformer like that, I would actually prefer PlayStation in that sense because I like using the D-pad for 2D platformers. Anything 3D or 360 degree, I would probably pick Xbox or Switch more just because I can get to the joystick a little easier, and that just feels a little more comfortable for me in that way.
So I singled out Dead Cells specifically because Dead Cells is a weird one for me. Anytime I pick up Dead Cells and I'm playing for any like length of time, I will always start playing it controlling with the D-pad or the little cross buttons on the Switch. But within about 10 to 15 minutes, my brain auto-corrects itself and switches to the thumbstick for movement control in Dead Cells. Now, there are gobs of other games where that's not... But for some reason, Dead Cells specifically does that to me, and I don't know why, but it does.
But for games like Celeste, that's another great 2D platformer. A bit of a hidden gem, if you know your memes with Nintendo Switch on Reddit. Super Meat Boy, played that a ton. Even on the 360, where I first played it, I would always use the D-pad on that one.
Yeah, precision platforming, you almost always want a D-pad, but... But yeah, let's see. What else figures into this?
So we were talking about, is it a good bite size or not? You were talking about being in the car to pick
up. I'm also with you on the where is it available physically thing. I'm actually going to backpedal just one second because something is in my head here and it merits mentioning. And that is on the subject of is it on Game Pass and using Game Pass to try something. I'm going to shout out to one of our crew, Chris, and his compatriot, Tom. 1H1D is wonderful for kind of preemptively going, is this even something I'd be interested in? Because they go through gobs of stuff on Game Pass every week and have been for a couple of years now. And they do a great job of almost demoing games for you enough to where you can hear them comment on it for 30 minutes every week and know if this is something worth checking out in the first place. And the thing is a lot of the stuff that's on Game Pass is on other platforms. So, like, before I got our Series X, I wasn't even keeping up a Game Pass subscription, and my Xbox One was honestly kind of collecting dust, but 1H1D was a great resource for figuring out and finding games that were on Switch that I may not have caught otherwise. And I've told him, like, bro, you need to start mentioning if the games that you're playing are on other platforms too, because that's a really useful tool. So that's something just to throw out there. Go check out 1H1D because that's handy in this instance as well, I think.
Beyond that, the, like I said, the type of game makes a difference. The controller, not a huge difference. I will say, to your controller point with the PlayStation, though, holy shit. Asymmetrical sticks all the way, baby. Like, the only thing that the PlayStation controller has going for it for me over the Xbox controller is that the D-pad isn't so clicky. It feels smoother.
I like
the rumble. It's got a little more mush to it.
I like the rumble feature for the DualSense controller a lot more, too. I'll say that. It's very close to the Switch's HD rumble.
Yeah. Trying to think what else really figures into it for me.
One that
I think those are the big things for me.
One that is the biggest reason I still browse Steam and PC sales, even though I have more powerful consoles than my gaming PC, is another factor is, if I can't find it physical, how much does it cost digital? Where are the best sales? And almost always that's going to be Steam, or if I picked it up for free on Epic or GOG or anything like that, then yeah, I'm going to try it out on there first. Will I probably go back and buy it if it's cheap enough, because the Epic Game Launcher sucks ass, but...
So let's take the last handful of minutes here, and let's actually pivot into the accidental topic adjacent that we brought up, is where do you play your games? You fire up a game, where you put couch, big comfy overstuffed chair, at your computer desk, on the john, in the car, on a plane, you know, where do you play your games, and what type of games give you the specific feel of, I want to be in this setting physically around me? Where am I parking my ass to play this? Is there anything in particular there that really jumps out at you or speaks to you?
So, I remember when I last had COVID, I locked myself in the guest room so Gigi wouldn't get sick, and I brought my Switch with me. I think that's probably the most gaming in bed I have done in my entire life. I get why a lot of people game in bed. Most of that time I was playing AI Somnium Files, which is a visual novel. So, you know, not very intense game in terms of reaction times and all that. I could definitely see, if I were more of a cozy gamer than I am, I could definitely see the appeal of having the Switch or Steam Deck, or what's the PlayStation Portal? Is that what their new thing is called? Cool. I can absolutely see the appeal of curling up in bed, not getting out, and putting on those. All my consoles are in the living room, so if I play on anything other than the Switch or my laptop, I can't do that in bed. And it's laptop gaming in bed, you know, at that point I might as well just be in a chair or a couch, right? But I personally am not much of what I'm going to describe as a comfy gamer. Not that those games are bad. Stardew Valley and Animal Crossing, objectively speaking, are very well-made games. Mm-hmm. Lots of content, absolutely see the appeal. But when I'm gaming, I'm usually a little more... I'm trying to think how I can say this without trying to be that casual gamers aren't real gamers person. I like to be a little more involved. I don't play games to shut my brain off. I play games to focus my brain on something else.
Here's the distinction. I think you just tripped it in my brain. I don't think it should be a distinction between casual and hardcore gamers so much as it should be, are you a lean forward or a lean back gamer?
That's a good way to put it. I'm very much a lean forward gamer.
Mm-hmm.
I need, even if I'm not doing something that
we
requires,
need to like force this into the lexicon.
Even if I'm not doing something that requires fast reaction times, I need to be doing something that's either exercising that or exercising my brain, like strategizing which order to play my hand and slay the spire, or what move am I going to make next in Stellaris or something like that. Even if I'm not necessarily sweating in the game, I still need to be involved either mentally or physically with it.
That's fair.
And so I feel like that's the big part of the reason why I personally am more of a couch or a gaming chair gamer 90% of the time when it comes to which spot am I gonna pick. Now, if I have long car ride, or God forbid if I'm ever in a plane, ugh. But those, you know, your options are kind of limited. You can't exactly take Xbox or PlayStation on the flight with you. But you can,
depending on your internet connection on your phone, sort of, and what you're playing.
That's true. But in those situations, I will usually bring my Switch and try to see if I can get a few hours in on something while I'm doing that. So when I am traveling, if it's long periods of time and I'm not the one driving, I'm usually going to be bringing something with me. But that's about the only time I would say it's 90% couch or computer chair, 8% bed, 2% other.
So I'm a little all over the place, and it very much just kind of, there's all sorts of factors that go into it. One is, what system am I playing on and where is it located in my house? We spend a lot of time up in the bedroom. Typically it's kind of our space for Zoe and I. And so when we got the Series X, that's where the Series X got hooked up. And so a lot of that's also, the bedroom also has the newest and largest screen in the house. So that kind of figures into it as well. Depending on what I'm playing on my Switch, the bed is a nice place for that too. And this is going to be a weird one, and I don't know that it will gel the same for you as it does for me. However, while I love and typically prefer my Pro Controller on my Switch, if it's something like, say, Slay the Spire, where it's turn-based, not super precision control demanding, the Switch in bed is awesome. And here's why. Laid back, head comfy on the pillow, split Joy-Cons, because I'm not stuck with my hands together. My hands are comfortably laying on either side of me, and I'm just doing my thing.
This that might feel like
Joy-Con is ridiculously comfortable for that.
This might feel like an irrelevant question, but I swear I'm going somewhere with this. Are you a back sleeper, a side sleeper, or a front sleeper?
Yes.
Gotcha. I am almost exclusively a side sleeper. So okay. I feel like whenever I'm laying down, it would be really uncomfortable for me to try to game on the arm that I am laying on. And so I'd have to kind of find a way to get my Switch to stay sideways. Or normally when I'm gaming in bed, I have my pillows propped up behind me and I'm sitting against the headboard.
Right.
So I don't know if it's really properly laying down. It's kind of that halfway between sitting and laying down area. Right.
I get you. But that's one thing that plays into it. I love, especially as the weather's getting nicer, I'm really excited for this time of year again, because in the evenings, when the weather's nice, I will drag the Switch out onto the back porch and hook it up to the projector and kick on the fire pit, and I will play video games out in the evening by the fire in the outside. The first couple of games that I tested out with the projector when I got it last summer was Metroid Prime Remastered, which is gorgeous on a fucking 10-foot screen. That's one of those things. It is just so magnificently engrossing the bigger your screen gets. This is a slight deviation, but it is very adjacent. Screen size matters depending on what you're playing too. I got a buddy of mine I've known for a lot of years, and he is a huge Geometry Wars nut. Like, he ranks among some of the best in the world. And he won't play Geometry Wars on a big screen. He wants no bigger than a 32-inch screen to play on, and he'll, if you give him the option between a 32 and a 27, he'll take the 27 over that any day for Geometry Wars, because everything, his eyes don't have to move as much to keep view of the full field of view of the action. So he can be more immediately aware of everything happening all at the same time, and his response time goes up and gets better with a smaller screen like that. I've seen the difference in action. It's a weird thing to think about, but it makes a difference for something like that. As far as where I'm playing, sometimes it just depends on situational. You know, like I said, it's not uncommon for me to have my Switch in the car when I know I'm going to be picking up the Munchkin from school, which means I'm probably going to be sitting in the pickup line for like 20 or 30 minutes at least. But throwback to last November, Zoe and I went about an hour and a half south of here for a concert one night, and we had couple hours to kill in line waiting for the doors to open for the show. I wasn't going to bring my Switch to stand in line at a concert, but you betcha I brought my Game Boy Micro. It was just the right thing. It was the right amount of perfect for portability, pocket sized. I could crack it out, and I didn't feel like I was being spatially intrusive to those around me, just propped up against the wall and sitting there playing my Micro happily and just listening to the conversation going on around me. They're all things that matter. Am I playing a game in which is more, and I'm going to throw up in my own mouth for saying this, is this a more cinematically engrossing experience? If yes, I probably want to play it on a big screen in an overstuffed chair, something where I am actively sitting up and forward and leaned into. Am I playing something that's less precision demanding on the hand-eye coordination? Probably laid back in bed, sprawled out on the couch. It's all about the feel of the game, and being in a seating environment that matches the demand and the mood. Beyond that, how much can I shut out all the light? That makes a difference to me. If I'm playing something moody and intense, I want like a pitch black fucking room, if humanly possible. that matters. Like, the only lights that I want to see, if I have the option, are coming off the screen and the little connected light on my controller. That's it. Shut everything else out. How much can I deaden the world around me in my setting from one room to another? The living room is great because it's, for me, because it's down in the basement. I can turn off all the lights. I can shut off the screens on my desk here, and the only light is the TV, and I can just engross myself, which reminds me, I need to get new blackout curtains for the bedroom because the stuff that we have in there is terrible, and trying to do anything game wise during the day in the bedroom, despite that being where I end up playing most things these days, is fucking awful because we got a gnarly glare on the TV during the day from the window over the bed. But anyways, and honestly, that makes a difference too, is at least for me with some of the stuff that I'm playing, is the when, because of the where. Control has been a shining example of this, and I've been running into it with the Dead Space remake as well, is that they are much more difficult for me to be able to sit and play during the day in the bedroom with the Series X because of that glare. And so that makes a difference.
One thing I just thought of while you were talking, do you and Zoe ever game at the same time, like right next to each other, but playing different consoles? Like one of you will have a handheld, one of you will be on console or something similar. Because Gigi and I do that actually quite a lot, where I'm on the PC and she's like right over here on the couch. She's playing Pal World, I'm playing Yakuza, and we're just kind of both big chilling around each other.
We do, but not as much. Usually if Zoe is playing something on the TV, I will probably either be involved in a conversation or a phone scroll. I may be laying in bed reading a comic and catching up on some of my reading. And that said, there are times where Zoe will be playing something on the Xbox and I'll crack out my Switch. Zoe is not nearly as inclined to game on their Switch as I am, but they will from time to time. Zoe has made it abundantly clear they much prefer the Xbox to their Switch. And a lot of that just comes down to the library of games more than anything. But it's still there, and they still crack it out from time to time for some things. So, yeah, no, it's valid.
But the fact that we do that, I don't know if it really makes a difference on which console we put it on, but it does, for me at least, matter in the sense that I need to kind of spread out, and I can't homogenize all my games on one, because if she wants to be playing Pal World and I want to play Yakuza, well, I have to have access to Yakuza either on Switch, which it's not on, or the PC then. And so I've been playing, I've got the entire catalog, I say the entire catalog, I don't have Like a Dragon on GOG. That's the most recent one that's available on GOG. But I have 0 through 6 on there, as well as they're on Game Pass too. PC Game Pass, both console and PC. So that's where I've actually been playing a lot of the older ones, the ones that came out PS4, Xbox One, and earlier. And anything that came out, Yakuza 7 / Yakuza Like a Dragon / Like a Dragon, Like a Dragon, anything that and later, I'll usually play on my Series X.
Yeah. Well, before we get too long in the tooth, let's wrap this up. Huge thank you to Wes for jumping in and joining me in this conversation tonight. Like I said, shout out and props to you for the topic tonight. Riker and I were actually just talking about this a day before you popped this into chat, which you were clearly tuned into some like fucking telepathic vibes. That was hysterical to me. Shout out to everybody that tuned in and listened this week. Thanks for hanging out and joining us. We hope you enjoyed. If you did, subscribe, share, depending on your platform, leave us a comment. Let us know what goes into your decision-making process on where, you know, what platforms you buy your games on and where you physically sit and play them. Because I think that's just as interesting of a question, if I'm being entirely honest. Shout out to our awesome sponsor, Imaginary Authors, helping you up your scent game with fragrances for guys, gals, and non-binary pals. Don't forget, if you know, we would love to hear your feedback, your thoughts, and you can share them and jump in the conversation with us in our Discord, link in the show notes down below. So jump in, come say hi, and let's have a conversation. I think we've pretty much covered it. Oh, real quick housekeeping note. If for some any reason there's you're having hiccups with getting our show in your podcatcher feed, know that we are working on it. We have just migrated from Podbean to Transistor, and there may be a couple of little hiccups along the way. Plus, I know with Google Podcasts having shut down and moving everything over to YouTube Music, we are attempting to work out the kinks in this horribly executed platform transition. Thanks, Google. Dicks. But it's a work in progress. We're getting there. It's being worked on. If this has not already been hammered out by the time this episode drops. So that said, if you're having problems and you've caught this episode, we've probably already fixed it. So, you know, but just in case, know that it's a work in progress. And if there are problems, we are working on it. But do feel free to let us know if you're having complications or difficulties with that, because it might be something that we're not aware of, and that kind of thing helps to bring to our attention. On that, I think that's a perfectly good place to wrap this up. Say goodnight, everybody!
Mwah. Good night, everybody.
You've been tuned to the World 1-1 Podcast, powered by the World 1-1 Podcast Network. Press start to engage your mind. Peace!